At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscience meeting. Once again, I'm an alcoholic named Rich Paul.
Hey, Rich. Hey, Rich.
Today I meet those requirements, but there was certainly a time that I didn't. You know, I got here because I drank because I didn't want to deal with life. I didn't want to deal with my feelings. I didn't want to deal with responsibilities. I didn't want to deal with whatever you may or may not think about me or might be saying about me or 100 other, you know, imaginary problems I had. And my drinking got worse and worse and literally took me to the edge of death. You know, I tried every way I could think of to, you know, control my drinking or just stop or this, that, or the other. And I couldn't find anything that worked for me until I came to AA and until I got a sponsor and worked the steps and got a home group and got involved in service. And it's made all the difference in my life today. You know, life's not perfect. I think it would actually be kind of boring if it was perfect. but I'm glad that I have a way of dealing with things. You know, I have a design for living that's described in the big book. And I've honestly found that all my problems can be solved if I follow the directions in the book. Being the alcoholic that I am, sometimes I drag my heels. And it's all about how willing I am to do it. So that's enough out of me. All right. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your cell phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And now to introduce our speaker for this evening. So I met our speaker a few years ago. And to be quite honest, at the time, I wasn't sure he was going to make it. you know, he was coming around and he wanted it, but he just couldn't seem to get it. And, you know, it took some time. But, you know, and his journey started here in Orlando. He lives elsewhere now, and it's great to be able to go and visit him and watch him doing the deal and watching him extend his hand to the newcomer and watch him doing service at his home group and watching him walk guys through steps. And, you know, all those things that I used to say to him, he very kindly says back to me now when I'm muddling through things. He means a lot to me and a lot to my sobriety today. And with that, I give you Josh.
I'm Josh, an alcoholic. I'm freaking out a little bit. No, I'm normally all right with this sort of thing, but this is the clubhouse that I took my first white chip, and it just blows me away. I kind of Quentin Tarantino my story, so we'll get back to that a little bit later on. So to start out, my sobriety date is December 18, 2011. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. My home group is Primary Purpose Group in Fort Myers on Monday nights. Starting out my just a quick history of my family. I'm in an alcoholic family. That's the only way to put it. 3 out of 4 of my grandparents have died in their disease. My aunts and uncles, they collect DUIs and arrests and other things. But my parents actually don't drink. They never did. This paper's falling all over the place. My parents don't drink, and they didn't drink. They stopped when I was very young. So I grew up in what would be like Boy Meets World, the Matthews family. That's what I had, the Brady Bunch, and it was great. I mean, they're phenomenal people. They're not dry drunks. They're just not alcoholic, and they're just phenomenal people. So I grew up with this great example of what I should be, and also on the other side, what I shouldn't be, aka you guys, alcoholics. And so I grew up from a very young age. I decided, you know what, I'm probably an alcoholic. Before I ever had a drink, I made the decision, you know what, I am never going to drink. And that worked out great. No, it didn't. So I went through high school, and I actually didn't drink all through high school. I got all the way through, had a great GPA, a huge scholarship to a phenomenal school. And that's how I defined myself. I defined myself solely out of my victories, out of my accomplishments, out of what I did. Because that's what was important. You know, I did this. I got the girlfriend. I scored the touchdown. That's what it was about. And that's how I define myself. And that's such, it's a void you're just always trying to fill. You do one thing, and guess what? Tomorrow comes, you got to do something else. And it's not fulfilling at all. But that's what I did. And that's how I got by. Then I went to college, and during this time, as I'm transitioning over to college, my relations with my family was not so hot because everything was about me, and they just didn't get that. And so, when I went to college, our relationship just—it was zero. Anytime we talked, it ended in yelling. We rarely spoke. Once a month, if I could push off that much, I would. And eventually, they kind of caught on to the fact that I started drinking. Because I came to the realization, you know what? It's not anymore about my accomplishments. I'm already in college. I've arrived. I have made it. So now it's about fitting in with everybody. And so I joined a fraternity, and I just went to town. And it started, I would drink once a week, and then it became every day. It was my way to evolve. And, you know, it wasn't alcohol for me. That wasn't my drug of choice. My drug of choice was indifference. That's what I needed. I needed to not care. I needed apathy. I needed to escape from the reality of life because I couldn't control you people. You guys are crazy, and you wouldn't listen to what I had to say, and I was the director, and you needed to figure that out. And that, you know, jump into the future. That's not what it's about. I mean, that's not what today is for me. I'm not the director. I can't control you guys. You guys are going to be crazy, awesome, sane, insane, whatever. I can't control that. I've got a big guy to do that, and that's phenomenal. It's such a relief because, man, you guys sometimes. So I'm in college, and I'm going to town, and my relationships with family not so hot. I was at college, but I didn't really go to college, if that makes sense. I kind of opted out of class. I showed up for midterms and finals most of the time, and that got me C's sometimes. My GPA plummeted, though. C's are not going to give you the 4.0 GPA that my parents kind of expected. And so it got to the point where they decided they were going to cut me off. They weren't going to help me go to school anymore. And I had this big scholarship. I had it's $40,000 a year. Not to brag, because this is how dumb I am. I had $32,000 a year covered, and my parents had to pay $8,000. My rationale behind that was, you know what? I did my part. I did what I need to do. $8,000. I'm doing you a service. Pay up. That's what I thought. And so I was so upset and resentful towards them for cutting me off. And honestly, it's one of the best things they could have ever done for me. That's one of the things, one of those bottoms that helped save my life. And so I ended up going to live with my parents, which even in sobriety is rough. And so I went to live with them, and that only lasted a month because they didn't like my drinking. They didn't drink. I wasn't even 21 at this point. So they weren't cool with it at all. I guess when they catch you peeing out of a window, it kind of sets off some red flags. So they kicked me out. Well, I thought I left. I said that I was leaving on my own will, but whatever. And I ended up couch surfing for a little while up with some fraternity brothers. So I'm back up there. I'm doing my thing. I had a restaurant job, which is just so great for an alcoholic. You get cash when you need it, and you go to town, and then the next morning you broke again, you borrow some gas money, and you go back, and you get some more money at work. And that was my life. That's what I did. And I thought that was all right. Because you know what? The only thing that mattered to me at that point was that indifference that I just spoke of. I needed to be indifferent. Because you know what? If I care, that's when I realize how much of a screw-up I am. And you know what? It's a vicious cycle for me. Because as soon as I get indifference in me, I still have morals. Don't get me wrong. If I drank, I knew right from wrong. I still knew it. But I didn't care. I was indifferent. So, I mean, I would do all kinds of crazy things. And I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd turn into a saint. And I'd say, oh my gosh, I'll never do that again. And then I sobered up or I chugged a beer so I could lose that hangover that I was really good at getting. And then I was off to the races again because it was still all about me. So my parents ended up bailing me out again. They decided to go ahead and pay for my schooling. I went to a community college. They let me live with my brothers. And I'm living there. And still super selfish, guys. I'm still very much an alcoholic. My grades got a little better because I discovered online classes could fit my timing needs. And so I did that, and they thought I was all right until my 21st birthday. And I did something terrible. I hurt my twin brother extremely badly. And I don't know what I was thinking. I can't believe it. Something I thought I would never do. And I woke up the next morning, and you know what I did? I swore off alcohol again. And it was the first time I ever looked up AA meetings. Didn't go, because you guys are a bunch of drunks. But I looked it up. I knew where you guys were. I figured it out. Central Group. It looked like a big deal. You guys had a lot of meetings going on. And so I decided I was going to go, and then I got an email right before I went, because I'm so good at excuses, guys. I don't know if you're like me, but God, I can justify just about anything. And I got an email from my parents, and they said, right before Christmas, they said, Josh, we heard what you did to your brother, and you have a choice. You got to choose alcohol or your family. And I go, yeah, I'm going to have both. I can have both. That's all right. And they're like, no, you can't. And I was like, no, I'm going to do both. And they said, okay, well, you're not going to come to Christmas. And that, another beautiful thing they did to me. I need these bottoms, guys. I need to be told that I'm jacked up. And I still do. In sobriety, my friends, Rich has told me multiple times that I'm jacked up. I've had the honor of telling him he's jacked up recently, which is very good. Because that's what I need. That's what I need. And so my parents told me not to come home for Christmas, and that devastated me. And so what did I do? I got indifferent, because that's my solution. And still going to school. I moved out of the apartment where my parents were paying. I got my own house with some friends, which was like $150 rent a month, and I couldn't even pay that because I was such a freaking slacker. And still going to school, but I decided something. I came to the realization, you know what? Maybe alcohol is my problem. I was not talking to my parents at all at this point, and I figured alcohol might be my problem. So I did what any sane person would do. The only way that I knew I could get sober was to run away with the army. That's where you laugh. That's really funny. If you've seen any military movie, you know that that is the dumbest idea in the world. The military revolves around alcohol a little bit, but I thought it was all right, so I ran away. I joined the Army National Guard, and I had about 8 months of training for my first job, which was a tank electrician. So I go up there, and I'm doing my thing, and I actually, right before I left, I got this girlfriend and realized that I really needed to stop drinking, because she was, to this day, I still think she's an amazing girl. She was valedictorian, she volunteered, she doesn't drink, she was beautiful, athletic, everything I wanted in the girl. And she liked me, which was freaking nuts. That was probably the only thing that was wrong with her. But anyway, so we started dating, and I'm away at basic training, and you know, I just decide, you know what, I came here to slow down my drinking, but I'm going to stop. I'm done. And that worked out great for about 6 months. Because you know what? You're on lockdown, right? You can't do anything anyways. How am I going to make alcohol on the toilet? I'm not in prison. I won't do that. That's what I said. But about 6 months went by, and I discovered this great thing called the weekend pass. The weekend pass, guys. It's where you get a pass for the weekend. And they let us go out, and I went in the hotel, and my friends, they were all partying. They were with me, and you know what? I texted my girlfriend at the time, and I go, this is a quote. Would you be mad, upset, or disappointed if I drank tonight? No, side note. I already decided I was going to drink. I already knew I was going to drink. I just wanted someone to co-sign my bullshit. She texted me back, to be honest, probably all of those. And I go, well, my bad. That was the last time we texted that night. And for some reason, she didn't break up with me then. She really should have. She was really tolerant. I guess that's another defect of hers. And so anyways, we made up. Well, I made amends, not a real amends. What I thought was an amends at the time. And we progressed in our relationship, and I actually came back from my unit still drinking, came back in August, and by September I came to the realization, I did another thing that I would never do, right? I got that indifference in me, didn't care about my actions, knew it was wrong, did it anyways, and I woke up the next morning and I just could not believe the bottom that I had hit. And that one really threw me. Couldn't believe it. And I called my girlfriend that day, and I said, you know what, I need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, I'm the kind of alcoholic, when I get sober, the world is going to know. Like, I didn't post it on Facebook, which is a Christmas miracle, because I probably would have if I thought of it. So I called her and I told her, you know what, I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was completely supportive because she's awesome. And that's what I did. And, you know, it's funny. I've told this story so many times, but never here. And so this just blows me away that I have this opportunity. I was out in that parking lot, and I don't remember walking in. I mean, it was a little while ago, but I don't know how I got in. I would just put it up to a higher power, because something carried me into these rooms. And I came in, and I knew what I was going to find. It's going to be a bunch of people talking about how they were miserable and they wish they could drink, but they couldn't. Because that's what you guys were going to do. I saw my aunts and uncles. I knew what you guys were about. And I came in and I saw all these freaking smiling faces, these happy people reaching out, shaking my hand, giving me hugs. Guys, I felt so disgusting. I've never felt so gross in my life. Really, I haven't. And you guys were hugging me and telling me that, you know what, maybe I should stick around. And that blew me away. And, you know, that kept me coming back. That really did. And that's something that I try to carry into the rooms every time that I go. Because that's what saved my life. I mean, everybody in this room, whether I knew you back then, didn't know you back then, saw you, thought I saw you, envisioned you, whatever. You guys, you saved my life. And that's amazing to me. And so I came in and I listened to a guy qualify, and, you know, I still got this crazy mindset, right? It's still all about me. Actually, at this point in my life, I had hit such a deep bottom that it was no longer my accomplishments that I based my life off of. It was off of my girlfriend. She was valedictorian, guys. I must be all right. She was pretty. I must be all right. She's awesome. I must be awesome, too. So that's how I define myself at this point in my life. And I show up in the rooms, and you guys are giving me a hug, blah, blah, blah. We said that. And then this guy qualified, and he told the story about how he was homeless. And I was like, well, these guys are pretty bad. I'm not like that at all. And they asked if there were any newcomers, and I stood up and I gave this lovely speech about how I was Josh, and you know what, I think I might want to stop drinking for a little bit. And they said, keep coming back, and I sat down, and I felt pretty proud of myself for making it that far. And towards the end of the meeting, they asked people for chips, right? They're doing their chips. And they said, does anyone want to try our way of life? And I stood up, and I was like, I guess I'll do this. And I walked up, and I hugged this bearded man. And I grab the chip and I go sit down, and at the end of the meeting, I asked someone, I heard about sponsorship, and I had heard about it from movies, or I don't know where I'd heard, but I knew that it was something that you guys thought was a little bit important, and I guess I might give it a try. So I asked some lady walking by, and I was like, okay, who should sponsor me? Who should I find? And she said, oh, well, that bearded man you hugged is pretty cool. And so she gave me his number. And I called this dude on the phone, and he didn't answer. I left a voicemail about how I wanted to get sober and blah, blah, blah. A bunch of BS that I didn't really believe at the time. But you know what? I got a safe face. I told everybody that I was going to go to AA, so I'm going to go to AA. And the guy called me back, and he said, you know what? It'd be my honor to take you through the steps. He asked me if I was willing. I said yes. I was probably a lie, too. But you know what? That's where I started. That's where my adventure in sobriety started. Did I stay sober the entire time? No. No, I didn't get it yet. I still had a need to research my disease a little bit further. But I started the steps with this guy, and we went through one, we went through two, we went through three, made it through quite a few of them, and then I had the opportunity to drink again. And what did I do? I drank again. And once again, I did something terrible. Like, this is day one of relapsing. I did something that I never thought I would do. And I broke up with my girlfriend because of it. She didn't break up with me. I broke up with her because I had relapsed. And I felt ashamed, embarrassed, unworthy, depressed. I mean, the world still revolves around me at this point, guys. I had my own world, and it was phenomenal. And so I broke up with my girlfriend and decided, you know what, I'm going to go back to the rooms. And I went back to my sponsor and I said, please take me back. And he was like, okay, yeah. And we talked about the girl a little bit. And I cried because I'm a wuss. And but I did cry. And, and you know, we talked about it. And, you know, we started the steps again. And I went through. And this is the point in my life where I met Rich. We kind of met in a meeting. And he kind of took me under his wing a little bit. And And that was really cool. Good for you, man. And no, it was really cool. It really helped me out. And I really started trying this time. Like I really realized, you know what, I can't do this on my own. I need to give this a real effort. And I tried a little harder. We made it through even more steps. I think we made it all the way to 9. And right when 9 came around, I decided, you know what, I don't need this anymore. I'm cured. I was cured after 37 days, which I think is a course record. I don't know. But I thought I was all right. And I actually went back out and I drank for a couple more weeks. And at this point, I'm worn down, guys. I can't get it. I just got evicted from my home. It actually wasn't my fault, believe it or not. It wasn't my fault. But someone in my house had to leave to make room for somebody else. And I volunteered because, you know what, I knew that I was sick and I needed some help. And so the last day, right before I moved, my buddy Rich came over, and we're talking, and you know what, he's hanging out with me knowing full well that I probably drank the night before. I probably went pretty hard, and I did, let me tell you, I went pretty hard the night before. But he came over, and he said, you know what, Josh, let's hang out, let's have some fun. So we hung out, and he asked me something a couple hours in. I said, Josh, why don't we go to a meeting? Why don't we check it out? And I go, you know, we've tried that. We gave that a shot, and it didn't work. And, you know, that was December 18th, 2011, and that was the day that I call my sobriety day, because this guy pulled me aside and asked me to go to another meeting. And I did, and we got to the end of the meeting, and they said, anybody want a white chip? And I was like, no, I don't want a white chip. And he goes, yeah, you should probably get one. And I go, all right. And I go get a white chip. And then at the end of that meeting, he goes, Josh, what are you doing after this? And I go, well, I'm probably going to go pack. And he goes, nah, let's go to another meeting. We went to 4 meetings. I mean, he made me pick up 4 white chips. What an asshole. That's what I needed, though. I needed humility, because you know what? I didn't have it. It was still all about me. And I needed to transition that away, because you know what? I needed to realize exactly what I was, and that's a broken individual. I am a sick person, and I'm a sick person today. I can come up here and speak gold, and you guys can think I'm doing great. Guys, I am sick. And if you're in here, you're probably sick too. Sorry to break the news. Not to speak for you, but, I mean, if you're like me, you're sick. And so, Rich, we'll talk later. That might have been crossing the line. So anyways, I started, this is day one sobriety. He took me to 4 meetings, 4 white chips, and the next day I was moving to Naples. So guys, I made a move on day one. You say wait a year to do anything big? I was like, nah, screw that. So I left after a year. Or after a day, sorry. And I moved down to Naples, and I talked to my sponsor on the way down. He said, you know what, I can't sponsor you when you're that far away, which makes sense. He said, we'll keep in touch. Graham, we're going to talk about that later. He doesn't call me. But no, you told me I needed to find a sponsor down there. And I did. Day two down there, I went to a meeting. I saw a guy, and he had something that I wanted. And I said, you know what? If I see him again, I was going to wait. And I'll ask him to be my sponsor. And lo and behold, he went to the same meeting the next day. And I went up to him, and I said, hey, man, I'd really like you to be my sponsor. And he said, it would be my honor. And that's really where my sobriety started. I mean, I had the seed planted before, but this is where I knew, you know what, I cannot do this on my own. I need to figure out what these guys have, because you guys are not miserable. You're not at all what I thought you were, and I need to figure out how to get that. And so I started working the steps with this guy, and we went through step one, and step one is about how I'm powerless over alcohol, right? My life is unmanageable. I got that. I was powerless. I got it. I figured that one out. I'm powerless. If I have one drink, I want to drink them all. I actually had a night where it was called, Can You Drink It All? Not a joke. And I was powerless. But unmanageable, I didn't get that. Because, you know, I came into the rooms, and you know what? I wasn't homeless. I didn't have a DUI. I didn't go to jail. I'd never been really caught doing anything bad. I did a couple things bad, but I didn't get caught that I know of, that I remember. But you know what? My sponsor at the time explained something to me. He said, there's a part in the big book, I'd like you to read it. I forget the exact page, but basically a psychiatrist is talking to somebody, and the psychiatrist says, if you're trying to control it, it's probably already out of control. That was the definition of my life. My life was unmanageable because I tried to direct and manage everything there. And I could not, I couldn't even manage myself. And that's what really, that was my foundation right there. Step one, foundation. Because you know what? I tried that before. I went through the steps. But if you don't get it and you don't build that firm foundation, if you don't build a solid step one and then a solid step two, step three is going to crumble. You need to have that solid foundation. That's what I found out. I need to have that solid foundation. So step two was pretty easy. I always believed that God was in my life. You know, I always believed that He was in existence. But while I was drinking, I also knew that He didn't care about me. Because, you know, I prayed to be cured. I prayed to be helped. I prayed to have money. I prayed to have a job. But He didn't give me any of that. But, you know, I came to the realization in the rooms, like, you know what? Okay, maybe you believe in a higher power. That's great. But you need to be friends with your higher power. You need to build a relationship with that God. A relationship with your higher power, to me, is like a relationship with you guys. If I want to be your best friend, I should probably hang out with you, and I should probably do the things that you do. But if my best friend's an addict, and he does drugs every day, if I want to fit in with him, I'm probably going to have to do drugs. If my best friend's a scholar, I'm probably going to need to learn how to read. I mean, but if I want to be a godly person or live in a will that is not my own and that is of my higher power, I need to start doing things that my God would want me to do. That's what I needed to realize, and that's what I needed to start practicing. And once I realized that, I was ready for step three. Step three is where I give up my will. I say, you know what, it's not about me anymore, which was revolutionary. At this point, it was 23 years of me. Yes. But it was 23 years of me, and now it wasn't. Just like that. I gave up my will to my higher power, and I said, you know what, you take me home. And that's what He did. And I simplified it, because, you know, I can make anything more complex than it is. And so my sponsor said, you know what your higher will's power probably is? It's probably just to do the next right thing right now. That's it. That's how simple my higher power is. Do the next right thing. And that's what I try to do. And a lot of times, that's go to a meeting, help a newcomer, talk to your sponsee. I actually have a sponsee now. That's nuts, man. Just do the right thing. That's what it was about. And so we got to step four. Let me backtrack a little to my first step four. This is how insane I was. My first step four, my sponsor took me through. This is in Orlando. He took me through and he said, okay, you're going to write down for your sex inventory, you're going to write down her name and what you did to her. So I go, all right, okay, I can do that. And I, you know, I'm not a graphic person, so I did the base system. Jessica, first base. Sarah, third base. Rounded the bases with Susan. And my sponsor let me get through like six of them. Like, he was loving it. He was like, Josh, that's not what I meant. You need to redo this. Because it turns out it was what I did, how I impacted them negatively, what I did to them that was wrong, because I'm doing my fourth step. I had a searching and fearless moral inventory. There's not a whole lot of moral things going on in my first fourth step. But I did a real fourth step with him, but I also, moving down to Naples, I'm out of my mind right now. I went down to Naples and I did a fourth step, and you know, I really dove into it. I took it deep, and you know, I didn't waste time. You know, sometimes people take their time with it. I dove in, and that's probably one of the few things that I did right in this program, other than not drink. And so I did that, and then I did a fifth step. And the fifth step, unreal. Unreal. You're putting your life out there on the line and trusting that this guy is not going to laugh in your face, pretty much. And both my sponsors, because I did two fifth steps, they told me that the three things, both of them did three things that were just, they never thought that they would have done. Things they were going to take to the grave. That was the phrase they used. And that made it easier for me. Because you know what, I heard what they did, and they trusted me, so I was like, you know what, all right, maybe I'll trust you. And I actually did it. I unloaded everything on him. I split the load. That's what you guys say, right? A load shared is a load split. That's what I needed. That was a relief. And I took an hour, and I just looked back on it, and I asked myself, was I searching and fearless? Did I go all the way into this? Did I do the best that I could? Was I vigilant? And you know what, I was. And so at that point, my sponsor said, you know what, we're ready for step six and seven. And I go, all right. And at this point, because I am still in the National Guard, at this point I have about 2 months sobriety. And still in the National Guard, and my annual training came up, and we were sent to Germany. 2 months, guys. 2 months. And I'm sent to Germany. I am freaking out. Calling my sponsors, speaking in meetings. I was like, guys, I don't know what I'm going to do. I go over to Germany. I woke up my sponsor at probably like 3 a.m. I don't know. There's a six-hour time difference. I woke him up so many times, and I don't feel bad about it. And I immediately went up, and I spoke to the chaplain, and I said, chaplain, listen, I need meetings. I'm an alcoholic. I trust that you're not going to tell anybody. I need meetings. And he goes, okay, we can do that. Let's find Alcoholics Anonymous, anonymous meetings. And it turns out there was one a week. So I go, I'm only there for a month, and I go, every week I go to this meeting. I got special approval to go during lunch. And so I show up, and there are about four guys there. I have 2 months sober, and I have the most sobriety there. They're like, all right, Josh, you're going to chair and tell us how you did it. So I'm freaking out, guys. I don't even know how I've made it 2 months, and they're asking me to explain it to them. And we ended up going, we went to Munich, we did all these sweet trips. I went skiing in the Bavarian Alps, these unreal things that I never would have gotten to do. And you know what, I didn't have to drink because you know what, I was so worried about trying to help these guys. I don't know if they're still sober, we're not in contact, but it was an unreal experience. And it's what I needed. I needed to be put in that position where I'm helping somebody else. And that's exactly what I was doing up there. And so when I came back, I was ready to go, and I dove back into the steps, and my sponsors took me through 6 and 7. And so 6 and 7, you're giving up your defects, right? Those things that block you from God, which I had a lot of them. I have a lot of them. And so I did that. And you know what's really cool about the 7-step prayer is you're not just praying for the bad things to be lifted that block you from God. It's the good things, too. You know what? If I am too smart to believe in a higher power, I need to be lifted of that. If it's a good thing, but it's blocking me from God, and some of my bad things I thought were good things at the time, then they need to be lifted. And that was my prayer. That's what I did. So we did that. And then step 8, right? So we're making that list. So I've got my 4th step in front of me. I'm going to town. All these people I need to make amends to. I was terrified about it. And you know what? Right into step 9. And I had to go out and do that. What an experience, though. Like, I went to my parents, and I made an amends to them, and I didn't say I was sorry. That's what my sponsor said. They told me I was a sorry individual. I didn't need to say sorry. I needed to make amends. I needed to make things right. And that's what I did. And you know what? Most of the people that I made amends to really just wanted me to stay sober. They're like, Josh, you're kind of a jerk. Don't be a jerk, and we'll be good. And so that's what I had to do. I had to stay sober for these people. Because you know what? It's not about me today. It's about the people in my life. It's about the miracles that have come true in my life. It's about you crazy people. I mean, that's what it's about today. So I did 9, and then you get to the maintenance steps, right? Get to 10, 11, and 12. So 10, I mean, you're doing your inventory every day now. And, I mean, we're not perfect people. Just because you're sober, I don't know if anybody's told you this, but you're probably not perfect. And I am definitely not perfect. And I make mistakes on a regular basis. I had a 10-step rich yesterday. I was being a jerk. I mean, that's what this is about. You know what? You know what? I've cleaned up the wreckage of the past. It's gone. You know what? I'm using it as a tool moving forward. It's my experience. It's not a weight. It's not something to regret. It's just there. It's there to reference so that I don't have to do it again. And so that's what that maintenance steps is about. It's about moving forward, learning from your mistakes, and when you are wrong, promptly admitting it. And you know what? I do that every day because I am wrong every day. The 11th step, building your relationship with your higher power, right? Gosh, that's a beautiful thing. It's unreal. My relationship with my higher power, I hear people say there's a second to none. Lies, mine's second to none. It's unreal. Like, I talk to this guy. He looks out for me. And you know what? When I'm wrong, he kicks me in the butt and says, dude, you're wrong. Fix yourself. At this point, I'm about 8 months sober. And at 8 months sober, I'm still freaking crazy. And I am cured again. And I think I'm good. And so I stopped going to meetings. And I tell my sponsor, you know what? I go to church a little bit. I'm all right. And he goes, all right, dude, call me when you need me. And I go, all right, goodbye. And I didn't go to meetings for an entire month. I had friends outside of the program that were not alcoholics. They were good people, but they did not get my disease. They knew I was in the room, so. And it's 4th of July of 2012, and I'm there with my friend, and he goes, "Dude, why don't you just have a beer?" I go, "Nah, man, I can't do that. I told you that. I can't do that." And he goes, "Nah, dude, just have a beer." And that's when I came to the realization, you know what? I am crazy. I need to be with people as crazy as I am so they can tell me how they stayed sane. And you know what? I mean, I'm still friends with the guy. We don't hang out very much. But you know what? I came to the realization, I need to be in the rooms. And at this point in my sobriety, you know, I had done service. I had a home group. I had a sponsor. But I didn't do the fellowship. That was the one part of the equation that I left out. And I wasn't very happy. To be honest, I was not happy at all. I did not know how to have fun in sobriety. And so I made a decision in July of 2012. I said, you know what? I'm going to dive into this program. I'm going to go 10 toes deep. I'm going to smother myself in this program until I get it and I am happy. And I did it. I went off to the races. It was that day, and you know, I joined a young people's home group. They went out every time that they had a meeting. They had fun. They went bowling. They did crazy things. And it was awesome. I started working with other individuals. A little bit later down the road, I got a sponsee. I picked up a year. I mean, it's such a cool experience to be able to be a part of that. We had good times. We had a crew. And in our crew, there were four of us, and we worked out, and then we went to meetings. And the next day, we worked out, and we went to meetings. And we each had jobs, so we'd figure out how we were going to do it, but we did it. And three out of four of us stayed sober. I don't know if you realize this, but that's a phenomenal statistic in AA. For three out of four young people to stay sober, and all of us have over a year. That's unreal. And why is that? It's because we looked out for each other, we dove in. They say, get in the center of the herd. And you'll stay sober. You want to know why that is? I'll tell you why. If you are in the center of the herd, they say you're not going to get picked off, right? Well, that's true. But also, when you start to slow down, your buddy right behind you is going to push you forward. And that's what they did. If I started slowing down, hey, Josh, I didn't see you at meetings. What's up? Hey, Josh, you're kind of being a jerk again. What's up? Josh, you don't act like you've been yourself lately. What's going on? That's what I need. Because you know what? All of us are human. That's a fact. We have a 10th step for this. But you know what? Sometimes I don't even realize that I'm wrong. Sometimes I don't even realize that I'm messed up. And I need you guys to reach out and say, Josh, you are jacked up. Fix yourself. And that's what you guys do. You guys are direct like that. And I love it. So that's what happened. I dove into the fellowship and I called my sponsor back up immediately. So immediately, a month later. And I called him up and I said, you know what, I want to dive in. And he doesn't really believe me because, you know what, I'm a little bit of a flake at this point. I've stood him up many a time. And he goes, okay, well, we're going to do this right then. We're going to start where we left off. You didn't drink, so that's great. But we're going to start at the basics. You're going to go to meetings every day. You're going to call me every day. You're going to pray every day. Those little things that you hear at the very beginning, that's what I needed to do. And I needed to do them. It wasn't because he asked me to. Like, they say they're suggestions. No, it's, dude, do this or you're probably going to drink. That's what it is for me. And so that's what I did. You know, I started going to meetings. I dove in, like I said, and my sponsor picked me back up, and we went through the steps from where we left off. So step 11, building that relationship with your higher power. Just building it. So cool. And then step 12, being the hand of AA, right? Helping other people. You know, I've had so many wonderful opportunities. My first year of sobriety, I'm pretty sure, and by first year, I mean like first 8 months, I wasn't in fellowship. I was doing my own thing. I was still in meetings, but not in the fellowship. So 4 months of sobriety, I'm pretty sure I could have traveled the globe with the amount of gas miles I spent just driving people to meetings. You know what's great about that? If I'm driving you to a meeting, I'm going to a meeting. Riddle me that. It's phenomenal how this program works. I help you and you help me. That's why I tell my sponsee, I don't think he believed it at first. I didn't believe it at first. That's for sure. My sponsor said, oh, no, you're keeping me sober. I was like, yeah, okay, help me out. I'm going crazy. And today I get to do that. You know, today I get to say, you know what? I'm helping you for me. It's not about me today, but it is about me today. Because I need to be able to help somebody else to stay sober. That's my solution. That's what the promise is. That's how they come true. It's by me going out and giving what's been freely given to me. You know, today I can tell you completely honestly that I am still a liar, a cheat, and a crook. I'm that same person I was. Me left to my own devices, I am crazy. But when I turn that me into a we, when it's no longer just myself, when I couple that with something more, and when I say we, I'm talking about all you crazy people. I'm talking about the person that I help. I'm talking about my sponsor, my sponsee, and especially the big guy upstairs. That's what keeps me sober. When I turn that me into a we, I have a lot to offer. We have a lot to offer. We have a chance to stay sober because I can't do that on my own. I've proven that time and time again. That I cannot stay sober. I can't. But we can. And if you look at every single step up there, it's not, you know what, I've got a problem. I'm powerless. I'm unmanageable. It's we are. And there's a reason for that. I think they were kind of smart, the people who wrote this stuff. Because you know what, they're onto something. This is not about me. It's about us. And so that's what I get to bring moving forward, right? And I get to practice these principles in all my affairs. And when I say that, I don't do it perfectly. I take my will back on a regular basis. I'm human. And, I mean, the third step, right, give your will up to your higher power. It's more like whack-a-mole. It's not like you do it once, it pops up, you slam it down, pops up, you pull out your God-shaped mallet, slam it down again. I mean, that's what my third step is. It's whack-a-mole. And my will pops up every single day, and I need to slam it down every single day. I don't have a whole lot else to say. I mean, that's what this program is, right? It's giving my will to someone else, doing it for someone else, and actually being a little bit more than myself. I get to be a little bit bigger than that today. And you know what? If I stay sober tomorrow, I get to be a little bit bigger than that tomorrow. I mean, it's unreal. And as I make these mistakes through life, as I mess up, because you know what? I've said it like 12 times. I'll say it again. I mess up. I'm human. But here's the thing. If I don't drink, anything that I mess up, I can fix. I can fix that today. If I drink, though, all bets are off because I don't mess up and then drink and that's it. I mess up, I drink, and then I tear my entire castle down. You know, the miracles aren't just one. It says, don't leave till the miracle happens. Don't leave because the miracles don't stop. There's more than one miracle, and they've come true in my life. And I'm talking relationships with my family. You know what? They like me today. You know, I said I wasn't invited to Christmas. The next Christmas, they told me, you know what, you can come because you're leaving with the army. The next Christmas, I was living with them because I was trying to get sober but didn't know how. The next Christmas, you know what, I actually could buy them presents. This Christmas was just unreal. This was probably the best Christmas of my life. I got to hang out with my family. I got to do fun things. I got to buy them presents and not be selfish about it. I actually planned out the presents I got, which is crazy for me, because normally it's like Christmas Day. I'm like, okay, I got to go to Walgreens. That's what I got to do. That's what this program's given to me. I have a job today, and that's not a miracle, because I had a job when I was drinking. The miracle is I actually can be a contributing member of my job. I can actually show up. I'm not hungover when I show up, which is another Christmas miracle, because I showed up drunk all the time. Or not drunk, sorry, hungover. And I don't have to do that today, guys. And you don't have to do that today. I mean, if you haven't had a drink, that's a miracle. And that's not congratulations to you. That's congratulations to the big guy upstairs and the person next to you. You know, we get chips in this program, right? And they denote lengths of sobriety. But that's not how sobriety is measured, at least to me. Sobriety is measured by willingness. I don't care if you've got 20 years, 20 days, or 20 weeks. And I went way out of order on that. But it's measured in willingness. If I have 20 years of sobriety, but I'm not willing, A, I'm going to drink, or B, I'm just going to be a jerk because I'm not living for someone else. But you know what? I can be willing today. And I was willing yesterday because I didn't drink. That's great. And you know what? God will, actually, Josh willing. I said God willing once to my sponsor, and he said, I heard a rumor he is, so you should probably be willing yourself. So Josh willing, you know what? I'm not going to drink tomorrow, too. And that's a miracle. And, you know, I don't, this is the second time I've said this, but I actually mean it this time. I don't have a whole lot else to say. That's what this program has given to me. That's what you guys have given to me. And, you know, because of that, and because of the miracles in my life, and because of the opportunity I have moving forward, I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. God bless you.